All right, welcome along to Team 33. Raf Giallo here, and also Endicall, who's one of the regulars from the show, and Cian Roach as well. But we do have a special guest. It is Stephanie Roach, who is back from Italy. You're here as a brand ambassador for Londis, and they are sponsoring Hell and Back, which I have experience of, good experience. Survived, I think, is the main thing. So it's coming back June 15th to 16th for the first time again. And obviously, it's all also for great cause as well, which is helping Pieta House, which is brilliant. In terms of doing things like Hell and Back, and for those who don't know, it's like an endurance kind of, I wouldn't say competition, but it goes, it runs across around 10 kilometres. Have you done anything like that before, or as a player, are you even allowed to?
Yeah, not quite, yeah. Like it's obviously it's a mental and physical endurance course, really, and it's been given the name as the toughest in Ireland, so I haven't had a chance to do it just yet, but I've gone the last 3 years and been there and seen it, and I've always said I want to try and do it, but I'm always in contract, so I always have an excuse not to do it.
Take your time about doing it, because I struggle through it. Like, I'm not a naturally fit person, so to do 10 kilometres where you're jumping, climbing, wading through, I'm not sure what it was.
Yeah.
Mud, mostly, but...
It's pretty cool to do with a group of people. And obviously, I think a lot of people do it for good causes as well. Like, Londis are doing their fundraiser for Pieta House this year by doing Hell and Back as well, which is a great cause. So I think a lot of people who do it do the same thing. So it's all going towards a good cause. And at the end of the day, it can be a bit of crack as well. Like, it's a bit of fun. I've always seen people who go to a scene to enjoy it and come away from it unharmed, which is always the fear going into it,
relatively,
I think.
Relatively unharmed by your dignity in my case.
Exactly.
But speaking of adventures and that kind of thing, you're back from Italy. What's the situation with the club Florentia at the moment in terms of your own future?
Yeah, I've just finished my season. It's been a weird time because I feel like, obviously, I've been talking about my injury for a while the last few years, and now it's kind of, I'm unlucky with timing, because I feel like every time I'm getting going, a season finishes. Like, before I got going, after my injury originally, I had just finished up with Sunderland. They had the issues they had with the men's club obviously going down, and that affected the women's side. So the women's team went down to the lower divisions, and it was my decision whether to stay there, which wouldn't have been good for me personally, so I decided to leave. And at that stage, I was without a club, having been out injured for a year, and then I finally got the opportunity to go to Italy. And as I said, just as I feel like I was getting going, the season was finished. So again, timing wasn't on my side, but I've enjoyed it. I'm back fully fit. Nothing's gone wrong the last couple of months, and I'm happy to be back playing at a high level. And as I said, being fully fit is something that I don't want to let go again, because getting back to fitness was the hardest thing ever. So it's been good to be back.
How did you find the adaptation off the pitch as well? Because obviously it's another culture. You've experienced France, the USA, England, and now it's another completely different football culture. And even like things like food and everything else, it's all quite different to what we're used to here. How did you find it?
Yeah, it's just different. I think the Italians are very laid back. Even just with my I had to wait a couple of months for my residency and my registration to go through, and every day I was like, what's going on, like, why isn't it true, I want to play, and they were just so lax about it. I was like, oh, it's okay, it'll go through. And a few players had the same issues with it, so it's been great, to be honest with you. I've really enjoyed the football, I've really enjoyed the lifestyle away from football, and a lot of the people at the club have been really nice, and I've been lucky enough as well. My auntie lives in Rome, so she's been close by as well if I ever need anything, and my family have come over quite a bit as well, so it's made it good, and it flew in, to be honest. I was there for 7.5-8 months, and it's gone so quickly, so that's always a good sign, isn't it?
Yeah, very, very good sign. Even outside of, I suppose, the league as well is quite strong. You know, you have the Juventus Women's, Roma. A lot of clubs seem to have, at least they're affiliated to the main men's team. Your club is quite different in that sense.
Yeah, our club has actually just been going now 5 years. So what happened was, a guy came in, he wanted to invest in women's football, and he was going to go with Fiorentina, and it didn't work out for some reason or another, and he ended up making his own team. And they, over 5 years, they climbed up all the leagues, and we've got to the top league, and the team done really well. Before I was able to play, the team were doing really well, and we ended up finishing up in sixth position, I think it was, which is great for your first season in the top league. And it's great to see that somebody like Tommaso, the guy who's involved, has put that money into the women's football, and it's been a great year for me personally, as I said.
Stephanie, just going across to the other side of Europe, it's a difficult thing to do in any sense when you're going into a new job, but football is a kind of an anomaly in itself. When you're moving over to Italy and you've been out for a year, like you said, with an injury, and especially with the women's game, they might not have had the chance to maybe see on the TV as much as, say, if a man was moving across to Italy. Did you feel that you had to prove yourself more to the players when you started to gain full fitness to actually show them what you can do on the pitch?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's been a case everywhere I've gone the last few years. I think, obviously, the Puskas and everything that came with that gave me a huge profile and people knew about me. So it was a case of me going there and making sure that I proved to the players that I was there because I'm a good footballer and not because people know who I am, if that makes sense. So that's probably been the hardest thing for me since everything that happened. But again, coming back from injury is hard to do when you're with a team who you've played with your whole life. But when you're going into a new team, you're trying to do your best. And I probably went in kind of doing too much because I ended up having a little bit of a knockback, and the physio and the strength and conditioning coach had said that it came from doing too much too soon. So I obviously went in all guns blazing, wanting to prove that I could play in the league and I could compete and do well for the team. And I'd done that quite well, and obviously I set myself back. So it was a case of just, for me personally, sitting back and going, look, get yourself back to fitness. Once you're fully fit, you'll be able to show what you can do. And that's, without being cocky, that's kind of what you have to do as a footballer. You have to believe in what you can do for the team.
So do you think the Puskas Award might have been a hindrance in a way?
I wouldn't.
Maybe your reputation might have preceded you before you actually got to prove that.
Yeah,
you know,
I think more so. I wouldn't say hindrance because it was an unbelievable experience for me, obviously, as a footballer, to be able to mix with them type of players and to be involved in what I was involved in. But at the same time, I think, as I said, a lot of people only know of me in new clubs because of that. They might not have seen me play properly before. Maybe, I suppose, going to Florentia was different because I played for Sunderland for 3 years, and a couple of the girls at Florentia played in England and have played against me, so they were able to tell girls, look, she played in the top league in England, she's a good player, type of thing. So that kind of helped with that, I suppose. But I suppose going to Sunderland, it would have been that, because a lot of the girls wouldn't have known a lot about me, and it would have been a case of just coming in and trying to show what I was doing. But I don't like using the word hindrance, but it's just different. It's a different kind of...
Would there have been a target on your head slightly for defenders, maybe?
I wouldn't say that. I think it's more so people kind of going, look, that's a great goal, but can she do it again, type of thing. And that's the type of thing that you're dealing with. And those type of things in football don't happen all the time. So it was a case for me to say to them, look, I'm not going to be scoring overhead kicks every week, but I will do my best to help the team, you know, like on the way. So...
Yeah, the Puskas actually, I suppose it shows the benefit of actually filming and having, you know, cameras there, because normally that game, when you did it at the time, it wouldn't have been on camera, but I think it was your manager, wasn't it?
It was the Westwood manager actually was recording it. Yeah. So it's happening now, a lot of women's football, particularly here in Ireland, with it not being a professional league. A lot of the clubs are trying to take a professional approach to it and record all the games, which is great, not just in case something like that happens, but just for their own personal kind of benefit within the players to kind of go through the games and see what they could have done better for the games. You see the best teams in the world are all doing the video analysis, so it's not a bad thing to do, and thankfully from my point of view, they were recording that game and they got it. Yeah,
and attendances in Italy as well. I noticed Juventus, I think when they were playing Fiorentina recently, was up to 39,000.
Yeah, they sold that. They got to play amazing, in the Allianz. Yeah.
And then Barcelona versus Atletico and the Vanda Metropolitano, again, something like 60,000 as well. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely a trend, I think, and even if we go off soccer, one of the ladies' football finals there recently Dublin and it was Mayo at the time. Again, huge attendance in Croke Park as well. So again, we're seeing a good trend of, you know, people taking an interest and actually going to games as well.
Yeah, I think with football, it's important that, like, I think women's football obviously is a long way behind men's football, and it's going to be a long time before it's competing with it. But I think it also needs the help of men's football to get to where it needs to get to. And you've seen that with the Atletico Madrid and Barcelona game. You had a lot of Atletico Madrid and Barcelona. How many fans have they got all over the world?
Yeah.
So if you're promoting that within your men's game, go and watch our ladies' team play, and a lot of people will go. And I've said this so many times over the years, I think when people go and actually watch the game, they might kind of go, oh, do you know what, this is quite good. It's not something, I didn't think it was going to be that good. Because we get a lot of stick from men saying it's not on the same level as men's football. And I don't think it is myself personally, but it's getting there, and it's a different type of football. And I think if people go and watch it, they'll want to come back and watch it. And it takes kind of, as I said, the men's game to try and help the women's game along in order for that to happen. And it happened with Juventus and Fiorentina as well. They had the Allianz Stadium in Juventus to play in, and also obviously in Spain it happened too. So it's great to see, and I hope it happens more.
Yeah, we actually had two of your international teammates, Louise Quinn and Katie McCabe, on the show after Arsenal won the league there last weekend. And Louise was saying that at Arsenal, the women's team mixes with the men's team, and Emery comes in, and they might be the women's team, they share the same training facilities, they get treated equally the same, except for maybe the likes of the pay gap that would be there. So do you find that's an approach that most teams should be taking?
Yeah, I think so. I had the same when I was at Sunderland. My first 2 years at Sunderland, it's same thing as what Louise was saying. We shared the same training ground, the same facilities. We ate in the canteen with the lads. Like, and it was kind of, it just makes you feel part of the club, and it makes the club feel as one. And I think that's something that needs to happen with women's football. It can't be, this is the men's team, that's the women's team. You know, we're not all together as such, and that's kind of what's needed, I think, in terms of the women's game to grow and stuff. And I think in England, it's definitely got better with the, particularly the Premier League clubs who are involved with the women's sides.
Do you think they should scrap the title altogether then?
Well,
just have, this is the Arsenal women's team, but don't call them the Arsenal women's team, they're just a separate branch and it's a separate league for women?
Well, I think the Premier League are actually coming on board, I think, in the next few years with the Women's National League in England, the Super League. So that's another step towards it, because it's not just the Women's Super League, the Men's Premier League, it's going to be the Premier League, the Women's and the Men's. And obviously there has to be a difference in both of them, but I think what we're asking for is to be given the same chance and the same kind of opportunities to play, and to be given the right chances to do that. And I think a lot of the clubs in England are going towards that, and I think that helps with England doing so well at the World Cup. I think that's something that the whole country got behind England, and if that can happen with us here in Ireland, I think it can definitely happen here too.
It appears that it is trending in that direction. I think the FA Cup finalists, the attendance for this year's FA Cup appears to be trending in the direction that's going to break last year's attendance as well. And with West Ham and Manchester City involved, you've got players, obviously Irish interest as well. But obviously, with those players involved in the international scene as well, like last month they would have had friendly against Italy over in Italy. Did you get down and see them at all?
I was training at the time, actually, but I've spoke to Colin Bell quite a lot, and obviously I'm in touch with a lot of the girls within the squad as well, and Colin's been great with me, to be fair, because I think for me personally, I needed to make sure I got back fit properly, and that if I went into the Ireland squad, I'm giving something back, and not just going in and kind of being part of the squad. Like, for me personally, I want to be able to go in and give towards the team, and Colin, I've spoke to him numerous times. I text him pretty much every week. I haven't texted him in a while, I must text him. But I've been in touch and letting him know where I'm at fitness-wise, and I want to be involved within the squads. And I was actually named in the provisional squad for that, but in the end we decided that it was probably best that I wait and get the last few games of the season in and then go from there. So I'm obviously still eager to play for Ireland. I've played for Ireland my whole career pretty much, so it's something that I want to get back involved in, but I want to make sure that I'm physically in the right condition to get in there and show what I can do.
Because you were talking to Emma Duffy at the 42 back in February, and the feeling around the time was that you were kind of not rushing yourself, but you felt at the time you were ready to go back in and that you weren't, and there was a bit of a period of frustration now. Like, has that passed? Do you feel like physically you're capable now of, because you said before you were capable of getting the 90 minutes in, like, is that a position that you feel that you're in now that you can give back to the team and Colin Bell's side?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's when I spoke to Emma, I hadn't started a game. I'd only been coming on in bits and bobs here in the few of the games and played maybe 20 minutes. I played a half then a couple of months after that, or a couple of weeks after that, so I gradually was building up my match fitness, but towards the end of the season I was playing full matches, so I was happy enough. I started the last game of the season and I played with no trouble. I felt fit as a fiddle, you know, on the way. So I do feel like, as a player, you're always going to say you're fit and you want to play, but you need people, I suppose, like Colin, to kind of say to you, look, how many have you played? What are you doing? How many games have you played? And where you're at, like, physically. And for me personally, I just want to play. I don't be thinking of that, but I think for me right now, after having the injuries I've had, I have to be clever about it as well. And thankfully, as I said, I've been flying the last few months. We've done fitness tests and I think I was second best in the whole squad, so I feel like I'm at a stage now where I'm able to compete again and be able to give back to the Irish team if I do get called in.
And when you look at the likes of the striking quality that the Irish team have at the moment, like Amber Barrett, Rhianna Jarrett, these are two players who are playing their football in the Women's National League over here. Like, is that a reflection of the strength of the league, and is that something that you would see a possibly return to Piemont or another Women's National Team Women's National League team in the future?
For myself?
Yeah.
It's not something I'd rule out. I think for me personally, I've enjoyed playing at a higher level for a long time now, and I think when I went abroad to play professional football first, it was a huge step up, and it's something that I probably didn't think of. I thought, like, I was top goal scorer in the Women's National League before I went away. I was playing in a really good Piemont team and I felt like we had a great squad. But then when I went to play in America and in France and then on to England, every player in the team is really, really good and really, really fit, and you have so much more to compete with. So for me personally, I think I'm 29, I'm 30 in June. I'd like to try and play at a higher level for as long as I can. So right now my ambition is to stay playing professional football for a couple more years at least, and then obviously I love to play in Ireland. I've got a lot of friends who play in Piemont and other teams that are in the league, so if I did come back I definitely will play in the league again, but I hope to play for a long time, so we'll see how long I go.
And what have you taken from each league, actually, interestingly enough, from, say, Ireland? I mean, stylistically and in terms of what you learn technically from England, USA, etc. What's the major difference and what do you pick up from each one?
Yeah, there's a couple of differences. I think in Ireland, I think we're I don't want to say a little bit behind because I don't want to be disrespectful, but I think in England, you're fully professional. The girls here in Ireland are trying to get better. They were training 2 times a week. I think they're training 3 times, some clubs 4 times a week, which is only going to be better for the league. But I do know when I was in America, it was a different style of play in terms of football. The training regime in all the countries have been pretty similar. But in America, it was more so about strength and fitness and being able to power through a game. In England, it was a bit of both. It was that and it was technical. A lot of the players are very good on the ball and they're very good technically. So every time you played the game, you kind of had to be on the ball. It wasn't a case of just running around for 90 minutes. But I think France and Italy have been quite similar. They're both kind of a little bit more time on the ball. I think it's a little bit more technical. You're not kind of rushed as much. But I've really enjoyed Italy, I have to say. I think it suits my style of play. I like to get on the ball and play a little bit, and I've been able to do that there. So it's been kind of, I suppose I could take a little mix from every country I've played in and say that in certain parts it's similar, but there's each one has their little different bits as well.
Yeah, you've started taking coaching badges, of course, I suppose, with an eye to the future. And one of the things I was interested just kind of when I was reading about you was you'd interned, I think, with the FAI in and around futsal, which, of course, for anybody who's involved in street football, as you would have been,
yeah.
It's something that I think maybe we should be doing more here. Is that something maybe you'd look to advocate maybe in time goes by, once your career finishes, maybe to, you know, maybe give a bit of a profile to futsal and see can we integrate that into the way players are developed?
Yeah, I've met up with a couple of people. Emma Switzer actually is involved in the 5-a-sides, 6-a-sides and 7-a-sides, and I would love to get involved with that. I think it is. I love kind of the futsal as in tight spaces and quick football and quick feet, and that's something that I like to do and I like to play. And I love the course when I was on it because we got to play every day in the indoor hall and we went outside and played as well. So it's definitely something that I think has helped my career quite a bit. But for me personally, I think I'd like to get involved in just normal coaching when I finish. I've just actually started up my own coaching company. We've had a couple of camps over the last kind of midterm breaks within schools, and also we're in schools doing after school sessions and in school sessions. So that's probably something that I'm hoping to build throughout my career now as I'm playing, so that when I finish up, I'll be able to come back to that. And I really enjoy coaching, and it's something that I kind of want to give back when I finish.
Yeah, of course, there'd be the skills coaching, but I suppose there's the other side as well of what a player can expect in the professional game. So I guess that might be another part of it that you'd like to instill maybe in young players coming through.
Yeah, I think it's even just giving them an insight maybe. I think I've done that at a couple of places. I've gone to do a little bit of speaking and stuff with young kids or people who are interested in having a career in not just football but in sports, and I suppose trying to tell them the dedication that's needed or explain to them what they need to do to be able to get onto that pathway and to stay on it. Because I've seen so many people who played football for years and gave it up because they either had work commitments or they had other stuff they had to go with, and thankfully I've been able to play football at a high level and stick at it for a long time, so hopefully I'll be able to, as you say, help kids who maybe want to do the same thing.
Yeah, actually it's just a year on as well from, 2 years on actually, because it was April 2017 from the press conference, of course, where I can tell from your reaction, but look, it was where you kind of discussed the issues that the Irish team at the time were facing, even the example of having to, you know, no training tracksuits, having to change in airports and things like that. In terms of the last 2 years since then, have you seen any improvement, or what's the, well, obviously there have been improvements, but in what ways has that actually manifested itself?
I think there's definitely been improvements. I think that goes without saying. I think a lot of the girls, I've spoke to a lot of the girls within the squad, obviously with me being injured, I haven't been around the squad as much as I would have been before. But I think we all knew with Colin coming in, he's got a great pedigree as a manager and he's a very professional guy. So we knew with him coming in that a lot of the stuff we were asking for was going to come naturally through him. But it was a case of us kind of saying, look, if we're going to compete with other nations, if you look at Scotland women's team, I mean, they've come on leaps and bounds over the last 5-6 years. And we were kind of saying, look, if we want to get to a final tournament, we're going to need these certain things to be done. And I think it came at a stage where we had just changed manager. It was a new regime. And we were like, this is the best time to do it. Let's go and do it now. And it wasn't the case that we wanted to be like the focus and people to look at us and put ourselves out there. It was more so we were trying to do it behind closed doors and get it done without anyone knowing about it. And then we had the PFEI come on board and help us, and it just seemed that no one was listening to us, so we went for it then. That's how it all came about. But as I said, I think it was a case of, I've talked about this obviously so many times over the last few years since it happened, but I think it was more a case of it needed to be put in front of them. Say, look, this is what we need. If we don't get this, we're not going to be able to compete. And then it was a case of, right, look, we didn't realise. Not that we didn't realise, but it was kind of like it needed to be said for it to be put into place and for it to be implemented. And as I said, thankfully, it's all took off over the last few months, and the girls kind of showed within the qualifiers last year that we can compete with the biggest countries in the world. And it's going to take a little bit more work. We're not quite there just yet, but thankfully we're getting the backing we need now, and it's up to us.
What's the next step for Irish women's football internationally? Like, didn't qualify for the World Cup, unfortunately, this year.
Yeah.
So where would you take the international team now? What's a realistic aim for them?
I think even before the World Cup qualifiers, and obviously as a footballer or as anyone involved with the team, you can't say, look, we're not going to qualify for the World Cup, we're concentrating on Euro. But I think looking back now, if you're to speak to anybody, I think Colin has a new squad of players, really. A lot of new players coming in, a lot of young players mixed with the players that have been there for a good while. And I think the World Cup qualifiers are always very, very difficult to get out of those groups. So I think anybody who knows women's football will probably have looked at it and said, let's do our best for this, but let's really focus on the Euro qualifiers, because it's a little bit easier to get out, not easier, but it's never easy to get out of a group. But I think it's a little bit in terms of there's more places in the group to get through. Yeah. The World Cup is only one spot, and then it's the playoffs, and it's a little more harder to get through. So I think the overall aim would always have been to get through to the Euro finals, and that's something that I think a lot of the players are focused on.
And you'd be hopeful to get into the squad during that qualification?
I hope so. As I said, I've been speaking to Colin quite a bit, and right now I'm in my off season, but a lot of the girls are finishing up soon as well, so my plan would be to hopefully get a good pre-season under myself before the qualifiers start.
Now that you're finished with Florentia for now, and you, like you said, you're in talks on your contract with them, do you think maybe a move closer to home, back to England or France, would be beneficial for you in your attempts to get back into their Ireland international squad then?
I don't think so. I think Colin doesn't mind where you're playing as long as you're playing, and I think that's something he's made quite clear. He wants you playing games, and he's trying to bring it into the Irish League here. He wants you training every chance you get, and that's something that I've been lucky to do over the last 4, 5, 6 years of my career. Like, I'm training all the time. But for me personally, before I went to Italy, I probably did say to myself that I want to get back to England. I think it's a really good league, and it's something that I feel like I still have a bit to do, and I think I could. I don't think I've done everything I needed to do. When I played at Sunderland, I played a majority of my time there at left wing back, yeah. Which is, if anyone knows me, it's an alien position to me. Like, I play up front, but I got better at it as I went along, and I think I done really well when I was there. But for me personally, I'd love to go and really show what I can do as a forward player, and that's something that's always going to be in my mind. But at the same time, Florentia have been really good to me. They've helped me get back from injury, so they have offered me a new contract. It's just a case of getting the kind of bits and bobs together as such, but I haven't said anything yet. I'm kind of keeping my options open for a few weeks.
Before you went to Italy, there was mention of Manchester United potentially hooking up with Casey Stone, and now that they're climbing the divisions in England, is that something that you might return to as well?
Yeah, I think I was misquoted with a lot of that stuff. Like, see, I basically done an interview with a guy who runs a United review page on Twitter, like, and obviously a United fan, and he knew I was a United fan, and he asked me would I like to play for Man United, and as a Man United fan, I'm always obviously going to say I'd love to play for the club, like, but for me personally at the time, it wasn't really an option. I was just back from injury, but it was just a case of me saying, look, that's the dream. You want to play for the club you follow as a kid, and the club, I still follow it to this day. Like, so it's something that if the opportunity came up, definitely I wouldn't turn it down. And I've said before, I'd play for United for free, but I don't know if I would really. But yeah, it's as I said, it was kind of not misquoted, but I think people interpreted that I was going there when I said it. But no, it's just something like, that I'd like to do.
Like, if the likes of Romelu Lukaku is asked, he says he always dreamed of playing in Italy. That doesn't mean he's actually necessarily going to play in Italy.
Just
in terms of the international scene, so Germany are the standout team in the group that you're facing, the Euros, and obviously they're playing at the World Cup. The World Cup's obviously starting very, very soon as well. Is that something you're going to be obviously keeping an eye on? But in terms of who you think is going to win or challenge, it seems quite a broad spectrum, like in comparison to maybe past tournaments. So who do you kind of see challenging maybe for those top, like, semi-finals, etc. places?
Yeah, I think obviously based on the last few tournaments, you'd have to look at the likes of England and France. I think Germany, in fairness, obviously have always been a very, very good club, or a good country, particularly in women's football. They've been the powerhouse really for a long time, but with the likes of the USA and France coming up and England coming up, I think they're going to be the teams who will be around. And I think one thing to mention is that the games are going to be live on, or on RT and TG Cahir as well over the next, over June and July, which is great to see, so more people can see. And again, I think that helps women's football in Ireland as well as everything else, so it's going to be good to see. But I think England could do really well. I think they've got the players to do it. They've got young players coming through, and they've got the kind of experience of getting the third place in the World Cup, so and the last in Canada. So I think it's going to be an interesting tournament, but there'll be some really good games involved.
If you're running those camps, if you're running camps and stuff like that after the summer with the World Cup on, are you expecting an upsurge of people getting involved in it? Like, is that one of the potential benefits and the offshoots of having something like this televised and having it so accessible on terrestrial TV?
Yeah, I think so. I think you get it with every sport, don't you? I mean, when the tennis is on, everyone's out with their tennis rackets trying to play a little bit or whatever. But I think even just from personal experience, when I played in England, and I've mentioned this a few times, when they done really well in Canada, they came third. I think the support we had coming to the games, it skyrocketed. Like, we had a lot of people coming and watching the games, and I know the FA had talked about how it was great to see so many people coming to the games, and they wanted to try and see how they could keep that going, obviously off the backlash of the team doing so well. So I think with the women's game being live on television and young girls and boys obviously getting to see it, I think it will definitely encourage people wanting to get out and play a little bit more. No less so than the men's World Cup being on television gets people wanting to go out and play a little bit. So
yeah, I guess one of the interesting things as well, just reading it today, Norway's Ada Hegerberg, who's one of the best players in the world, not going to the tournament. Again, that's a loss, obviously, for Norway, but you kind of want all the best players there. I think it's probably the main thing.
Yeah, definitely. I think she's had a little bit of trouble with the Norwegian national team. I think they got a little bit of sick after the last World Cup, and I think she got a lot of backlash because she is one of their best players, and they probably didn't do as well as they wanted to do, so it's disappointing that she's not there. I don't know the ins and outs of it, but obviously, if you have a chance to play for your country, I don't think there should be anything in the way, but it's not my place to say.
Yeah, and obviously there's some amazing players going over. As you mentioned, some of the England ones. I remember Marta from a few tournaments ago as well. Again, another kind of street footballer as well. In terms of players you've faced, in terms of the best you've ever faced, who would you kind of pick out at this point?
There's been quite a few. I think, obviously, Carly Lloyd has been unbelievable over the last few years in terms of, I suppose, how long she's kept at a high level, and she's been consistent, and I was able to play with her in Euston Dash when I was there, and she was a really nice girl as well. So I think she's obviously a phenomenal player. She's probably the one that stands out in terms of the all-round game and how she plays the game, so I'd be probably her.
Oh, good stuff. So best of luck anyway with the qualifiers. As I said, you've Germany, Ukraine, and then I think Montenegro, didn't you score a hat-trick against them at some point before?
Yeah.
So that'll be quite a reunion.
So yeah, maybe we might get brought back in for that one.
Yeah, so hopefully, look, as you kind of said, like, qualifying for a tournament would be huge, I mean, in terms of bringing people in, bringing in interest. So if that can happen, it would definitely be amazing in terms of bringing on improvements. But Stephanie Roach, thanks a million
for coming in.
Brand ambassador for Hell and Back. While I survived, it definitely is well worth doing. So if you can, it's for a great cause as well, Pieta House.